used to know a Rav who had a community in a place that was sort of dying, and he at one point he started a shir for women, and he told us that the first week he had about 25 women coming to the shir. It was a big success, and then the next week it was down to 18 women. The next week it was down to 10 women. He said eventually he had to stop the shir because it became a shaila of yichud. It wasn't so pasha to give a shir anymore at that point. So this morning when we looked around at how many people there were, I also felt there might be a problem with yichud, the amount of guys that were here. But Baruch Hashem, now there's a nice showing, and it's very, very late in the game. This is already, we're way into extra innings. And the fact that we have such a nice Eilam, Baruch Hashem, is a testament to you that you're a shteikikus for Torah, for Musar, for the barbecue, whatever it might be, has brought you back or brought you to stay. And it's greatly appreciated. You know, the great Vilna Gaon had a Talmud that's also very famous, and his name was the Dubna Magid. The Dubna Magid was, his name was Rabbi Yaakov Krantz, and he was around 21 years younger than the Vilna Gaon. And the Dubna Magid was somebody that was a world-renowned Magid. He went around to different communities and gave over the Dvar Hashem with, of course, his beautiful Mishalim. And he really made a Roshim on every community that he went to. He was an amazing orator. His content was always on target. And he really brought people to tshuva. The Vilna Gaon was, of course, somebody who was on the highest echelons of Talmud Torah Gaonus. He was a genius that was unparalleled. He was considered almost to be a Rishon in how great, how holy, how close to the Rabbeinu Shalom he was. And we literally live by the Torah of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was the Messiah, the Bala Messiah that all of the yeshivas in the world today hail from, because the prototypical yeshiva of Volozhin was really built and founded by Reb Chaim Volozhiner through the guidance and the etzes of the Vilna Gaon. And you wouldn't think that the Vilna Gaon was somebody that needed Musar. You wouldn't think that he needed in any way his iris, because he was the Vilna Gaon. If the Vilna Gaon needed Musar, then what should we say? But the Vilna Gaon, we have letters from the Vilna Gaon where he wasn't feeling well, and he wrote to the Dubna Magid, and he would say such lashonos as, Yava Yididi Labesi, please, my friend, make the trip from wherever you are. Make it to my house in Vilna. Come to me. Visit. Valya Achru Palmov, and don't let your footsteps be delayed in any which way. Lahashiv Ruchi, so that you can return my spirit to me. Ulishtashea Itai Kipam Bipam, and allow me to enjoy your company as we rarely do. When you get this letter, don't even think about it. Just run and come to me, because I'm craving, I'm thirsting your company. I want to hear Musar from you. And the story goes that in response to this letter, the Dubna Magid immediately came to Vilna, and he didn't even stop off the whole way on the trip, even for short rest stops, as most people did in those days. And even when he reached Vilna, he didn't settle into his lodgings to stop or to eat, but rushed straight to the home of the Gaon. The only problem is that he didn't know what to say. When he arrived in the home of the Vilna Gaon, you can imagine that the Dovna Magid got tongue-tied. A man of a silver tongue with such oratorical skill, such brilliance, the ability to give mussar, and all of a sudden he's standing in front of the Vilna Gaon and he's speechless. What do you say to the Vilna Gaon? What mussar could you give to the Vilna Gaon? The Vilna Gaon didn't sleep. He just learned all day. He didn't eat. He just constantly did mitzvahs and was Isaac and Kiddusha. He was a master of Bavli, of Yerushalmi, of Tekola Tarakula. He chazered it more times than we can count. What do you say to a man on the caliber of the Vilna Gaon? This is the Dovna Magid's conundrum. And we have a record of an account of what actually happened when the Vilna Gaon was sitting there and the Dovna Magid was once again asked to give him a Musar Drasha. And this is what the Dovna Magid said. He says, I really have nothing to say to you. If there's one critique that I could possibly think of that maybe, you know, would be helpful for the Gaon, it's this. With all due respect, says the Pasuk says, by Avraham Avinu, when he was pleading with Hashem to save Sadaim, Ulai Yesh Chamishim Tzadikim B'Seichair. Maybe there's 50 Tzadikim that are found in the midst of the city of Sadaim. Would you destroy Sadaim if there were 50 Tzadikim? And of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreed to that, and then Avraham Avinu continued negotiating until basically it all hope was lost. There weren't enough tzaddikim to spare Sadaim and Amira. And so basically HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed Sadaim and Amira. But Avraham Avinu tried his best. And the Dibna Magid was aimed on this word, Ulai Yesh Chamishim Tzaddikim B'Sei Chair. What is B'Sei Chair? Just say, if there is 50 tzaddikim B'ir in the city, what's B'Sei Chair? In the midst of the city, in the center of the city. What does that mean? So the Vilna Gaon waited for the teretz of the Dovna Magid. I'm sure the Vilna Gaon had 100 different pshatim to say. And the Dovna Magid said, this is what I think is pshat. With all due respect, b'mchilas kvay terasai, I think what it's saying is that a tzaddik has to be b'sei chair. A tzaddik has to be in the center, in the thick of things in the city. You have to be involved with the people in the city, with the shoemakers in the city, and the plumbers of the city, and the balagalos of the city. You have to be there. You have to be part of the city. You have to be a part of the community. And whereas the Vilna Gaon is the Gadol Adar, he's the Reish Kol Bnei Hagayla, but you don't really get out too often. You basically sit in your little Beis Medrash. It was called a Klaiz. It was a Beis Medrash, and he had his own private study, and then outside there were Talmidim that were learning. Maybe he gave Shir a little bit, I don't know, but he didn't get out to the city at large to speak to the people, to give Musar to the people. We have, I think, there are some occasions that the Vilna Gaon actually did speak in the large shul, the great synagogue of Vilna, was right next door to his klais, and there were times that there was crises going on in Vilna, and he did sometimes, on very rare occasions, come and give a drasha to the entire community at large. But very often, people didn't see the Vilna Gaon, and he was cloistered in his Beis Medrash. He was just learning. It's all he was doing. He was giving shiurim, learning. He wasn't even, he didn't write much. He basically, his mind worked so fast that he wasn't able to write as fast as his mind was moving. So all the Torah that we have, I believe most of it, if not all of it, is really what Talmidim wrote from him. I'm not sure if like the Pirushim that we have are all from his hand. A lot of them are from Talmidim that transcribed what he wrote, but he had a very hard time writing things. But that's basically what he was doing. He was either writing or learning or chazering or giving shirim in the little Beis Medrash that he had, but he didn't get out. And in order to be a real tzaddik, says the Domna Magid, you have to be b'seichayir. It's chamishim tzaddikim b'seichayir. It has to be in the center of the city. You have to be in the city with the people. And it's not a kunz. Closed the Domna Magid. This was his closer speech. He says it's not a big kunz to sit in the Beis Medrash all day and learn. Not a kunz, not a big trick. He says, if you want a real kunz would be go out and have hashpah on people, go and move and shake the community at large, maybe the entire country, maybe the entire continent, but get out and do something for Klal Yisrael. What are you doing sitting here and learning all day? That was the end of the Divna Magid's drasha to the Vilna Gaon. Now, there's two versions of how the Vilna Gaon reacted to the Divna Magid's Musar. One version is that he reacted as follows. He broke down and he started crying. He felt that the Musar had an effect, that he was right, the Domna Magid was right, and he had to change, he had to do something to try to get out more often and do something, and I don't know if he did or he didn't, but that's one version of the story that it affected him. He took the Musar to heart. Version two is that the Domna Magid's words were rejected by the Vilna Gaon. And when the Divna Magid said, it's not a kunz to sit here in the Beis Medrash and not be mashpi on other people, the Vilna Gaon says, the Eibishter is not looking for kunzmachers. He's not looking for tricksters. He doesn't need tricksters. That's not what he's looking for. I'm okay. I don't have to do tricks. Not needed. I don't need to do tricks. Don't tell me that it's not a big trick to, you know, it's a bigger trick to go out. I'm not a trick. The Rebbe Hashem is not expecting me to do any tricks. That's the two versions of the story. Opposite versions. I want to say a pshat, a chiddush in the second version of the story. The second version of the story that the Divna Magid was very uninspired. He was not affected at all. He wasn't impressed by the sharp words of critique of Musar that the Divna Magid was saying, that you really need to get out more often and that it's not a kunz to just stay here in the Beis Medrash. I want to say a little bit of a chiddush in that. It's not even a chiddush. It's more like a theory that I have as to why the Vilna Gaon was not impressed by that approach that the Divna Magid was taking. The Gemara in Brachas on Daf Lamed Gimel says, on the Pasuk, Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoyel Me'imach, Moshe Rabbeinu asks Klal Yisrael, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu expect from you? Ki Im L'Yirai Si, only to fear me. Kiyim liyirai, just to fear me. Fear Hashem. That's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. That's all Hashem wants. Kiyim liyirai. So the Gemara asks, V'chiyira milsa zutrasihi, is fear of God such a small thing? It's such an easy thing. Moshe Rabbeinu is making it out like it's child's play. What does Hashem want? Just fear him. Is fear of God such a small thing? It's a very hard thing to have real Yirah Shamayim. How many people have real Yirah Shamayim that they walk around with this fear, this dread, this awe of the Rabbeinu Shalom? Very few people have it. So what does it mean, Masham L'Kav Hashem, is Yirah Milsa Zutrasi? And the Gemara answers, yes, Gabi Moshe Milsa Zutrasihi. By, as far as Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned, by Moshe Rabbeinu, it was a small thing. Moshe Rabbeinu, Yerushalayim, was not a big deal. He, right? And the Gemara continues, gives a mashal. Because Moshe Rabbeinu had so much of it, it was like an easy thing for him. It wasn't a big deal. He was like a billionaire, and you ask him for a dollar, it's not a big deal. If you don't have a dollar, if you're not that wealthy, so a dollar might be a big deal, $100 is a big deal. But for somebody that's on Moshe Rabbeinu's level, Yerushalayim is not a big deal. And all the Mefarshim ask, okay, that's nice, but that's not, Moshe Rabbeinu is not writing an autobiography. He's not saying, I feel that Yerushalayim is nothing. He's saying to Klal Yisrael, what's the big deal? Yerushalayim, Masham Yerushalayim, Akim Liyera, he wasn't talking to himself, he was talking to Klal Yisrael. So the fact that he was so great that it wasn't a big deal for him, that's nice, but what about Klal Yisrael? He's talking to Klal Yisrael. For them, it would be a big deal. So why is he speaking to them as if it's nothing? That's a question that's plagued many Mefarshim. It's a very difficult Gemara to understand. And I looked in a sefer called Oil Yaakov, and the Oil Yaakov was written by the Dubna Magid himself. This was the sefer of the Dubna Magid's drushes. And in this sefer, I think we're going to be able to maybe have a little bit of a clue as to what the Vilna Gaon was thinking. Because the Dubna Magid writes as follows. This is his pshat in this Gemara. And he says like this. He says that it's a very hard thing to have Yerushalayim. V'im kol zeh, b'dayre shal meisher hayaneka lahasig ha'yira, ayide yirasai uktushasai shal meisha, ki hayan mishpam u'makam mimenu mimadregasai. If you're living in 2024, Yerushalayim is an impossible accomplishment. It's really hard to have Yerushalayim. It's hard. We could talk the talk, but it's very hard to walk the walk. To really have deep-rooted, seated Yerushalayim in the heart, it's very hard. If you are living, though, in the vicinity of Moshe Rabbeinu, in the year of Moshe Rabbeinu, in his vicinity, in his shchunah, in his area, it wasn't such a big deal. You know why? Because you had a Moshe Rabbeinu sitting there, and with his fountain of Yerushalayim, it just sort of overflowed onto everybody. You just had to be in the basic radius of Moshe Rabbeinu, and you were good. When the Gemara says in Legabe Moshe Milsa Zushasi, by Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not a big deal. It wasn't talking about just Moshe Rabbeinu. It was talking about Gabe Moshe Rabbeinu, the people on the perimeter of Moshe Rabbeinu, the people that are surrounding Moshe Rabbeinu, the people that are Moshe Rabbeinu's Dalet Amos, those are people, they were also mushpa from him. And then the Dubna Magid gives an amazing yesod that's very famous from the Vilna Gaon himself. He says, when I was in Vilna, I heard from the Gaon, when somebody asked him, what's the best way to make a hashpa on somebody? What's the best way to be mashpi on another person? And you know what the Vilna Gaon says? Is I'll give you a mashal. He says, if you have a very big cup, so you have a very big cup, and you have little cups all around that big cup, and you want to fill up all the little cups, so what you do is you pour, let's say, wine into the big cup, and then that big cup overflows, and the overflow drips and spills into all the little cups around that big cup. The Vilna Gaon says that that's the best way to make hashpa. The best way to have hashpa is not by what? Not by preaching, I'm going out, I'm teaching, I'm giving mussar. No. The best way to have hashpa on people around you is you fill yourself up. You fill your tank up so much, with so much Torah, so much Yiras Shamayim, so much Musar, and by doing so, you'd be shocked that the ripple effects are so profound. Everybody in your vicinity, everybody in your city will be mushba, will be affected by you that way, by osmosis. By osmosis. People say, well, it happened by osmosis? Yeah, osmosis. Osmosis is a very big deal. Osmosis is the way to be mashpia on person. Not by going out and screaming. The best way to be mashpia on another person is you act the right way. You sit and learn, other people want to sit and learn. You daven nicely, people want to daven nicely. You don't speak Lashon Hara, other people won't speak Lashon Hara. That's the ultimate way to mashpia on other people, not by going out. This is what the Dubna Magid says that he heard. He has a Mesira from the Vilna Gaon himself. And my theory, and I could be totally wrong, is that he maybe heard this from the Vilna Gaon at that moment when the Vilna Gaon was rejecting his Musar. Again, the Dubna Magid's Musar was, you got to go out B'Sai Chayir, get into the city, get into the thick of things, and give Musar and go give out. The Vilna Gaon pushed back. The Vilna Gaon says, no. You want to know how the best way to be mashpia is? It's not by me going out. That's a mistake. That's a fallacy. The best way, the ultimate way to be mashpia on people around me is by me sitting in this Beis Medrash and learning and filling up my tank with mitzvahs, with Yerushalayim, with Torah, with everything that I can. And the Vilna Gaon was full of everything. It was Mali V'Gadish, everything. And by doing so, the overflow, the spillover, will fill up everybody's cups. Everybody's cups will be able to be full by virtue of the fact that they are in my vicinity. And you know, remarkably, the Vilna Gaon was so successful in this approach. You might think, that's a cop-out. Come on, you got to go. Yeah. The Vilna Gaon, sitting in his Beis Medrash had such a profound effect on the entire city of Vilna. If you want to see a little bit about this, go open up an Aruch Chaim, Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim. There is a Hakdama to the Bir Hagra on Shulchan Aruch that was written by the Vilna Gaon's sons. They wrote a Hakdama, they wrote an introduction to his Bir Hagra on Shulchan Aruch. He has his little comments, his very terse comments, not little just he always wrote very, very succinctly. And, you know, you could spend, write Svarim, Bikur Shemem has many volumes of Svarim, just building on these few words of the Vilna Gaon to understand what he meant on the Shulchan Aruch. But if you look in the Hakdama of his sons, the Vilna Gaon's sons write that Ashrecha Ir Vilna, how fortunate was the city of Vilna, and the amount of hashpa that our father had on this city. He says the greatest of all the hashpas that he had is teaching the value of time. L'regam tivchanena, how the Vilna Gaon cherished every single minute of the day. Nothing was ever wasted. His day was fully booked. There was no extra time. There's no extra time. He was able to pack into 24 hours. When we say, I was busy a whole day, I was working 9 to 5. Really, how much in the 9 to 5 day does a person work? By the time you take your breaks and you take your coffee breaks and the water cooler and lunch and then do a daf yomi and then daf mincha, whatever. How much of the, and then shmooze and go online and Black Sunday, Black Friday, Black Monday, cyber, all these things. How much time at the end of the day and versus Nayez Yeshiva World, how much time do you, what's 9 to 5? 9 to 5 is maybe 2 hours. The Vilna Gaon's 9 to 5 was 9 to 5. The Vilna Gaon packed in every second was chashuv by him. There was no wasting time. And this had a hashpah on the city of Vilna. Vilna was changed by this. Rav Huttner used to say over a story about how there was a balagala from Vilna, a wagon driver. Wagon drivers in all these stories of Hasidim, and every year Balagola, Balagola is an Amaretz. Basically, it's interchangeable. A Balagola wagon driver is a guy that a complete ignoramus. He doesn't know anything. He's just driving. He's talking to a donkey all day. He has no, he has no. That's the way generally a Balagola is. A simple, simple man. There was a Balagola that was in the city of Vilna, and he was giving like a lift to some a Talmud Chacham from a different city. And they start talking, and the Talmud Chacham probably assumes that this film, that the Balagola is an Amaretz. He basically, you know, was talking about the weather, talking about politics. I don't know what he was talking about. As he was sitting next to the Balagola, all of a sudden the Balagola starts talking, you know, about throwing Gemaras at him, Shas Bavli, Yerushalmi. You know, he's a Shasyid. Shulchan Aruch, he had Bekiyas on everything. He was like, And the Talmud Chacham like was like he wasn't from Vilna. He was like from a faraway place. He says, you know, how do you know? How do you know so much? You're Balagola. So he says, I'm from Vilna. I'm not just a Sam Balagola. I'm a Balagola, but I'm from Vilna. So he says, no. So you're from Vilna. You're still a Balagola. He says, you don't know who lives in Vilna? The Vilna Gaon lives in Vilna. He says, so what, you learned by the Vilna Gaon? You sit by the Vilna Gaon? He says, no. He says, so how are you a Talmud Chacham? He says, about the Vilna Gaon? Because he was there. Because the Vilna Gaon lived in Vilna, that's all it took for me to be a Talmud Chacham. That's exactly what we're saying. The Ashpa of the Vilna Gaon was merely by him sitting in his room, learning Torah, filling himself up, and the overflow, the spillover, was so amazing that it was able to fill up everybody's... Everybody was completely changed. Their davening was different, and their learning was different, and their shmiras hazman was different. L'ragam tivchanena, that every second you're going to be asked about what you spent it on. All of that was changed, not because the Vilna Gaon sat, came and gave a shmooze from the pulpit and was, you know, Musser. No. He was just sitting in his room. But it just spread. It just spread throughout the air, and the water of Vilna was different because the Vilna Gaon was there. And, you know, you find like Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Chaim Kanievsky, same idea, right? He wasn't going out and giving drushes. I don't know if he ever gave a drush in his life. Maybe he gave a shir on the, you know, his father gave a shir once a year on the Yartz of the Chazanish, and the Kail Chazanish, maybe he continued that minig. I don't know if Rav Chaim Kanievsky ever gave a shir, a proper regular shir or a drusha. I don't know. I never saw pictures of him giving shirim. I only saw him sitting and learning. Maybe I'm sure he had a chavrusa, but he did have chavrusas, but never seen him give a shir. He didn't give musar to the pal. He printed a lot of svarim. How is he able to be such a hashpa on the entire universe? I mean, he's easily the most photographed man in the world. Who are there more pictures of than Rav Chaim? He had such a hashpa from what? What did he do? There were people that came to his house and asked for etzes. Brachas. What did he do? How did he change? He changed the world by sitting and learning. Pshuta k'mashmai. And you know, Rav Chaim himself used this gain to answer a few different things. Like when it says that Moshe Rabbeinu appointed Yeshua to be his Mamalei Makim. What does the Pasuk say? It says, Vayismaich Yadav Alav. He pressed his hands on Yeshua, which means that he basically gave him the mantle of leadership. Rashi says, Asa'o kikli malei v'gadosh. Moshe Rabbeinu, by giving Yeshua smicha, he made him like a kli that was malei v'gadosh, a kli that was overflowing. What does that mean? He says, that's what it means. It means that he filled up Yeshua. He filled up Yeshua's gas tank. He was able to have spillover on Yeshua. He gave Yeshua so much Kedusha, so much Ruchnia, so much Torah, so much Hadracha, that Yeshua was a Mashpia just by virtue of the fact that he was so full. His overflow was able to be coming into everybody else's Kalim to fill them up, so that they were inspired, that all the people in the vicinity of Yeshua and beyond, all were changed people because Yeshua is Moli V'Gadosh. Reb Chaim Kanievsky says that this is the Pshat in a Medrash in Kehelas Rabbah, Perak Yud Aleph, Medrash Yud Beis, that we know the Gemara in Yavam is similar, but it's a little different. There are nuances of difference between the Medrash and the Gemara about the 24,000 Talmidim that died of Rabbi Akiva, and they all died at one shot. And then he was Maimid 7 Talmidim. This is different than the Gemara in Yavamas that said there were 5 Talmidim. The Medrash says there are actually 7 Talmidim that he, after the 24,000 died, he reestablished 7. And then he also, this is also not in the Gemara, but he warned them. He warned the new Talmidim. He said like this, Harishainim Laimesu El Mepnei Shaisei Nehem Tzara Zelazeh. The first group, the 24,000, you know why they died? Because they had a certain stinginess, a tzaras ayin to each other. Also a little different than the Gemara. The Gemara says that they weren't Naye Kavod Zelazeh. This Medrash says that they didn't have a good eye to one another. They weren't happy with the success of the other. They were sort of very territorial. They didn't like sharing their chachma. They didn't like giving a generous spirit to other people. They were nayig tzaras ayin with each other. Atem leitiyu kein, you should not be this way. Miyad amdai umalai kol eretz Yisrael tayir, and immediately they got up and they filled the entire Eretz Yisrael with Torah. That's what the Medrash says. So Reb Chaim says, I don't understand this. They didn't go and start actively fanning out across the whole Eretz Yisrael and teaching Torah. They were still learning by Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was just getting started with them. So what does that mean, that immediately, Amdu Umalu Kol Eretz Yisrael Torah? How did that happen? They didn't go and do seed programs and NCSY and JEP and, they weren't doing that. They were learning by their Rebbe. They were sitting by Rabbi Akiva's feet and learning Torah from him. What does it mean that the whole Eretz Yisrael filled with Torah? Says Reb Chaim Kanievsky that they were still learning by Rabbi Akiva, but they were effective in their kiruv, in their hashpa, by the fact that they were learning so much and so deeply, and they were filling themselves up with the Torah of Rabbi Akiva, that it spilled over, it flooded over to the entire world. Everybody was changed just merely because there were these Talmid Chacham, these 7 Talmid Chachamim that were learning themselves so greatly, that had a profound effect and influence on the world around them. I was just thinking, Agav Orcha, that maybe the reason why the 24,000 Talmidim were not successful at this, and why they had to die, and everyone said, what did they do wrong? They had bad midah, so that they deserved to die. So it could be that the pshat is that in order to be mashpi on other people, in order for this trick to work, that if you fill yourself up, everybody else is going to be affected. That's only if you have a taivayin, if you're a generous person and you're giving, so then, and you have good midah, so then that will have ashpa. If you have tzarasayin, that means you're very, you don't share. You're keeping it all to yourself. You're learning, but you're keeping it all to yourself. You're not interested in having that overflow go out to the rabbim. That type of person is not going to have the ashpa that's necessary. Rabbi Akiva is warning them, listen, I want you to be successful, and the only way you're going to be successful is if you fill yourself up. Don't be like the 24,000 that were Nayig Tzaras Ayin. They didn't look to the next person like they wanted to share. They were bottling everything up inside of them. Oh, you're bottling up. That's not the way that you're going to be Mashpia on Tyre and Eretz Yisrael, Tyre in the world. You have to give. Doesn't mean that you have to go out and give. You have to be that type that's giving and wants to share their Torah with other people. And people see that. Then it's going to be able to have a roshim on every single person, even if you're not actively teaching. Just give you one final maramukim. Reb Schneur Cutler brings a pasuk in Kehelas that says, "Im yimlu ha'avim gashem ala aretz yariku." If the clouds are full of water, if the clouds are like pregnant with water, ala aretz yariku, it's good. They're going to spill forth over the entire earth. They're going to the whole world is the whole earth is going to be irrigated if the clouds are full of water. So the Medrash says on this in Kehelas Rabbah Yud Aleph Ches, "Im yomlu tamidei chachamim taira." If a talmid chacham like a cloud fills himself up with so much taira, al Yisrael yariku, it will burst forth on Klal Yisrael. What's the pshat in the Medrash? So Reb Schneur says it's from the Gaon. This yisayt of the Gaon that the Dumna Magid brings, that when you're able to be so full yourself, so pregnant with Torah, that it's going to perforce have a profound influence on other people. That's what the Medrash is saying. If a Talmid Chacham fills himself up like a cloud with water of Torah, then it will automatically irrigate the entire world, not by going out and doing anything. You don't have to. You could if you want. This isn't an anti going out and teaching, but the best way to mashpi on another person is just you yourself work as hard as you can to make yourself full of Torah, of Kedusha. That's the best way to be mashpi on other people. And we know this is true. We know this is true when it comes to parenting. Parenting, you see it right away. When you have a parent, a father in a shul, and a father is learning, a child wants to learn if he sees his father learning. I don't want to learn if my father is just doing nothing, but he's telling me to learn. That's baloney. I'm not buying that. But if my father is learning, then I want to learn also. That's the way it is. It's an osmosis thing. If I see my father learning, I want to learn also. I'll tell you a beautiful var from Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Herman, the All for the Boss, famous classic book. He was an early, real major mashpia in America in the early 1900s. He lived in the Lower East Side. He was a very big Machnes Eirach. A fascinating story. If you have a chance, you should read that book, All for the Boss. An amazing book. But we don't have so much Torah from him. But I saw a Vart from his beautiful Vart. The Gemara says in the Sugya of Chanukah in Maseches Shabbos, it says that that Haragel B'ner Havin Le'Banim Tamid Chachamim. If you have candles burning, you're going to have children. It's like a skula to have children that are Talmid Chacham. Rashi says, and they're Shabbos, and they're Chanukah. So how does a skula work? Because I like candles, because I have Shabbos candles, now my kids are going to be Talmid Chachamim? Like, why? And a lot of people, by the way, you know, a lot of people like candles all over the world. You don't necessarily see their children tremendous Talmid Chacham. So Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Herman says the following beautiful word. He says, let's say on a late Friday night, a child wakes up and he comes down the stairs and he needs a glass of water. He's thirsty. And he sees at the Shabbos table his father pouring over a Gemara by the light of the Shabbos candles. Let's say there's another person in the room for Shemayata purposes. We have to get that out of the way. But and he sees his father sitting and steiging at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning over Gemara. There's no cameras, there's no lights, there's no videos, not a photo op. He's just sitting and learning. And the father, the son, comes down and sees that La'ar HaNer, this father is sitting and steiging because he wants to, because he loves learning. that kid is going to inevitably be a Talmud Chacham. Not because of heebie-jeebie skulas, it's because it's just so natural. If you see your father learning and steiging and enjoying it and living it and legit being it, so the child has no choice but to want to do that. That's what you want to do. That's just the way it goes with parenting. If your father, you know, is a doctor and he loves that, there's a good chance the son is going to go into medicine also. If a father loves the Yankees, there's a good chance the son is going to love the Yankees. L'havdil, if the father loves learning, the son is going to love learning, but not by screaming at the son, you better learn. You know, you did so bad on the test, and your rebbe called me, and I can't. I'm going crazy from you already. Sit and learn. It's not going to work. Not going to work. The son's going to book. He's not going to want to do that in the worst possible way. The only way that's tried and true is you fill yourself up with learning. You learn yourself. You shtag yourself. You show nobody other than yourself how important Torah is to you. And guaranteed your son is going to be a Talmud Chacham, period. Davening. You're davening. And you're really shuckling, and you're really into it, and you're really having kavana, and you have and you enjoy davening. Your son's going to want to daven. If you're schmoozing with the guy next door, and every three minutes you go and tell your son to look in a sitter, and you know, then the son's not buying it. The son has eyes in his head; he's going to see. This Vilna Gaon is so obvious when it comes to parenting. That if a parent is just being a good person, the child by osmosis will want to do that same exact thing. In fact, the Chasam Sofer writes that if you see in the Parsha of Kriya Shema, it says, "V'hayu hadvarim ha'ele asher anochi mitzavcha hayom al levavecha." Liman HaTorah is what it's talking about. It should be on your heart. And then what does it say? "V'shinantam levanecha." And then you should teach your son. You know what the Chasam Sofer says? You know how you teach your son to learn? V'hayu adar ma'el ashanet al babecha. You learn. You put it on your heart. You shteig. You learn. It's going to be v'shinantam levanecha. But not because you're teaching him. It's because you're doing it al babecha. It's going to be v'shinantam levanecha. And if it's true by osmosis for parenting, it's true by osmosis for everything that we do in life. This is how it works. It doesn't have to be a child. It could be a roommate. If you're getting up in the morning for davening with a Bren, with a Slavos, and you're loving it, your roommate's going to also eventually, you know, say, I don't want to be the bum in the room just sleeping. I see that davening is important. I want to also go and daven. If you're sitting in the Beis Medrash learning, there's no greater magnet for other people to come to the Beis Medrash than you being in the Beis Medrash learning. Because they see, oh, it's cool to be in the Beis Medrash. It's a good thing to learn. He's enjoying learning. Maybe I should try it. I also want to be a Masmin. I also want to be a Talmud Chacham. That's the way it works. That's the aside that we have from the Vilna Gaon of the greatest way to make a hashpa. We're holding, you know, literally the last gasps of the Zman, and I'm sure many of you will, you know, stay here, go to the Kailal this summer, but not everybody. And this is a very important thing to just keep in mind as we're going into the summer. That the greatest way to mashpi on other people is by me just doing the right thing every day. If we go home to our communities and we just act the right way, nothing special. You don't have to do any major cure of outreach or, you know, make a chabura. If you want to do it, that's great. Nothing wrong with that. It's wonderful. But just merely being good, doing the right thing, acting properly, davening properly, learning properly, nothing major, just being a good person. saying Good Shabbos to people, saying Shalom Aleichem to people, helping out at home, just being a mensch, that's the greatest way of being mashpia on other people. We don't have so many people, they come, they want to do this, and they want to do the outreach, and they're going, traveling to other regions, and directors, and it's good, it's fine. But it's not the only way to be mashpia on people. It's probably the worst way of being mashpia on people, in a sense. The best way is just keep on working on yourself. If you work on yourself, if you work internally to build yourself and to act appropriately, and just really polishing up our midos, you will see amazing results throughout the entire world. The great Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the father of the Muslim movement, used to say like this. This is my favorite quote. He says, "When I was young, I wanted to change the entire world. I wanted to change the world. There are many people like that. They want to do something. They don't want to stay local. They want to be big. They want to like have outreach tremendous. They want to change the whole world." And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, "I was like that. I wanted to change the whole world, and it was a disaster. I was not able to change a single person. It was like I was trying to change the world, nothing happened." He says, "You know what? I know why I'm not successful, because my scope is too vast, it's too wide. I have to limit my expectations. So I'll change my country. I'll go from place to place in my country. I'll try to change the people, teach them Musar and to be better people and to be ethical and honest and good." Disaster. I wasn't able to change anybody. It was awful. It's okay. Too big a canvas. I'm going to change my city. And I went to a different shtibloch in my city shuls. And then also not a single person changed. He says, "You know what? It's too big. I'm going to change my family. My family I could do. I have a wife. I have kids. I have a cousin. I'll change my family." He says, "I wasn't able to do anything. No one wanted to listen to my mussar. Nobody wanted to be makabel anything for me. They say, like, you know, just go tell somebody else. I'm not interested. I'm not buying it." So I didn't know what to do. I knew that I had to change the world. I knew that was my mission in life. I didn't know what to do. So he says, "You know what I did? I looked in the mirror and I said, let's change ourselves. Let's change myself." So Yisrael Salanter says, "And I really worked hard on changing myself. It's all I did. I worked and I worked and I worked and I learned Musar and I learned Mesil Sisharim and Shari Tshuva and I Archa Sadikim. I was Timer Devar. I was working so hard and I tried to change myself and I was doing it and I was accomplishing." And all of a sudden he said, something magical happened. He says, "My city changed. My family changed, my country changed, and indeed the entire world changed." Rabbi Yisrael Salanter changed the entire world, but he changed the world because he started with himself. The greatest thing that we could do in our lives, at this point especially, once you're older, you know, then you gotta work, and then you wanna and you gotta be a Rebbe if you want, be a Rav, give shiurim, it's good. But before you do any of that, you have to fill up your own tank. There's nothing more dangerous than a half-baked ben Tyra that goes out and to give over Tyra to people, and they don't know what they're talking about. And then the person asks them a question, "I don't know." And then the person has a kasha, or he heard something, or he saw something online, a question, that's mamish, and they don't know. They don't know anything. Or they ask a simple Gemara, "I don't know." It's not a, you could do it, and maybe you'll be moderately successful, but if you really want to succeed in life, you have to fill up your own tank as much as you can. You have to change yourself. You have to work internally. There's so much avaida to be done internally that, and it never ends. Look at Reb Chaim Kanievsky, a whole life of internal avaida. And if he would have lived 1,000 years, he would still be besteiging and chazering and doing more and more. It never ends. The Vilna Gaon, the greatest people that we have, they're working internally, but look at the hashpa that they had on the universe. Look at the hashpa that they had. And of course, people that, you know, that are bigger mashpiyim, but they, you know, Rav Shach was a person, he literally, he gave fire and brimstone drushes throughout the whole world. I think Rav Shlomo Zalman said that he's one of the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. Rav Shach is one of the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. I said, Lamed Vav Tzadikim? Isn't Lamed Vav Tzadikim like one of those, you know, the 36 hidden, like the milkman and the, you know, the busboy, like, you know, the guys that no one notices, and everyone, the whole world knows Rav Shach. Like, what do you mean, 30, is hidden? He's not hidden Tzadik. Everybody knows Rav Shach. So he said, Rav Shlomo Zalman, that when you see a skyscraper, you're just seeing the skyscraper. Do you realize how deep the foundations had to be dug in order to keep up a building of that magnitude? The bigger the skyscraper, the deeper what you don't see. He says, whatever you know about Rav Shach, and we know a lot about Rav Shach, he says, that's he is mamish mechaset tefach, megala tefach, mechaset vachayim. You don't know how much he was, how much he had inside of him that you didn't know. The way that we are able to be really successful in changing the world, if we want to do that, if we have such ambitions to change in whatever way it is, if we want to teach Torah, we want to teach Muslim, we want to teach Midas, we want to, I don't know, whatever it is that you want to teach yourself first. Work on yourself. And the more you work on yourself, people, whoa, he's like impressed. This is an impressive person. Look at him. You could just see the shine on his face. You could see how he radiates joy and kedusha, and he's building himself. When you see that, you will be impressing so many people, not because you're trying to impress people, but people will be so drawn to you and moved by you, by your example, that will be how you will change the world. I know somebody who is a very, very chashuv Rosh Yeshiva today. And he's maybe 8 years older than me. When I just came into high school, he was an Elter Bacher. He was very, very chashuv a person. And then, you know, fast forward 30, 40 years, and today he has a long white beard and he's a very distinguished Rosh Yeshiva. He's very successful. And I remember, I heard once his father speaking. This person's father was Nifter a few years ago, but he said that he decided to send his son, this person I'm talking about, to this yeshiva where he's today the Rosh Yeshiva. He didn't know anything about that yeshiva. It was an out of town yeshiva. He knew nothing about it. The father. But there was another boy in the yeshiva, from the yeshiva, that davened in their shul. And this boy davened so nicely, and he was such a pleasant person, that the father says, I don't know where this kid goes to yeshiva, but wherever he goes, I'm sending my son. That's it. Now, I don't know where that first boy is. I don't know what he's doing today in life. I don't know what he is. But I do know that because of his just being a good person himself, simple, daven nice, nothing fancy. He wasn't, giving a fancy brisket shear, and that's not what impressed. Just he was a nice boy, he was a good boy, he was a person that clearly was a balavaida, that was working nicely on himself. He was a mechunach, he had good upbringing, good solid chinuch. That influenced the father to send this boy to yeshiva, and this boy today is a reshiva. But not some, a major yeshiva, because of a simple act of just being a good person. And that's how life is. You're walking on the street, people see you. And if you're dressing nicely, and you're walking nicely, and you're speaking nicely, and you don't have road rage, and you're not double parking and triple parking and honking your horn, you could really have such a powerful influence on people. But work on yourself. It's a lifetime ambition. This is not a summer project. This is a life project. But there's always, summer's a good time to start. Learn. But don't learn because people are looking. Learn because I want to learn. I want to daven. I want to be nice to my family. I want to work on my midas. I want to iron out a lot of the creases that I know that I have in my personality. I know that I get angry too much. I want to work on that. I know I'm jealous. I'm stingy. I want to work. I have issues. I want to work on them. And by working on them, that's good for you, but it's good for the world. You'll make a great husband, a great father, a great community member, a great leader, because not because you're trying, just because you yourself are so good. I once saw a maaseh with Rav Moshe Feinstein. He used to give a closer shmooze, I guess, before the boys went home for Ben Azmanim. And he said something very interesting that it might not be something even that we always think of. But he said like this. He said, I want to give you a musar shmooze before you go home. It's going to be a very easy musar shmooze to take, but just listen to me. And he said that a lot of times you're going to go home, Ben Azmanim, now there's Mincha Ma'ariv, right? Mincha Ma'ariv on a weeknight, tonight, Mincha Ma'ariv. So some shuls just go straight from Mincha to Ma'ariv. They, you know, they cross the Shkia border and boom, they start Ma'ariv or Plag, whatever it is. Some shuls, a lot of shuls, have like a break, like a, you know, 10, 15 minutes they learn Kitzer Shulchan Aruch, some simple limud. And the Rav gets up and he, you know, he takes the kitzer and the Balabatim are sitting. They get some halachas every night, some musar every night, whatever it is that they're learning. Now, you're a chashav yeshiva bachar, Meisha was saying to his talmidim. So you're not going to want to sit through a Mishnah Berurah, through a kitzer shir, because, you know, you're a buck in Mishnah Berurah, you're already in the major leagues. You don't need to listen to this Balabatish simple shir. So what are you going to do? You're going to take out your Gemara, your Eizvah Hadar, big fat Eizvah Hadar Gemara. You're going to sit down. You're going to start, you know, learning, underlining, a credit card. You know, you're going to start Safra card. I'm sorry. You know, you're going to start, underlining this. And you're going to, like, be shtaying. And, like, all the while, your Rav is standing there giving a drasha. Now, it's a chutzpah, you know, for the Rav that you're not paying attention. But that's not even the problem. Rav Moshe Feinstein said, the problem is, I don't even know how he knew this, but he said, the problem is that the Balabatim and the Shul are going to be looking at you. You're the new, you know, Yeshiva Bachar, you just came home from Yeshiva, you're, you know, the young Tzur B'Dmei Rabbanan, and they're looking at you. Now, if they see you listening to the Rav and sitting on the edge of the seat and like mamish, like trying to be makabel from the Rav, they're going to say, oh, a Rav is a chash of a person. Even a, you know, a yeshiva bach who has big resh yeshivas, he comes and he has respect for the local Rav. Very impressed by our Rav is like, you know, he must be up there. But if they see that you're completely dissing the Rav and you're learning your own thing, that means, you know, he's not interested, I'm not interested either. Like, what kind of rabbi? Maybe we need a new rabbi. Maybe, you know, maybe it's not for us anymore. Like, it's not, our youth are not really getting anything from the rabbi. He says, and that's a chil Hashem. That's a chil Hashem. And that's sort of, I think, in line with what we're saying today, that just be good. When we're going home, some of you might never be coming back to yeshiva as a formal Talmud. This is a message not just for the summer, this is a message for life, and it's not a message for you, it's a message for me. And I'm the spillover is going on to you, but I'm talking to myself. That every single day of your life, you wake up and say, I just want to work on myself. It sounds very selfish, but it's not selfish. It's the most giving thing in the world to perfect yourself. Because when you perfect yourself, all the people around you, they're just being uplifted and elevated by the mere elevation that you're on. Work on yourself. And if you're going out to work, and you're working, and you get there on time, and you leave on time, and you give a good day, and you're a positive person, you're an honest person, that's a Kiddush Hashem. You're uplifting the entire world with that. Not by preaching to anybody, not by tisk tisk, you know, you shouldn't be, you know, no. Just do the right thing yourself, and automatically people will want to do the right thing. They're not going to want to talk lashon hara around you if they know that you're a chashuv person. They're not going to want to talk. They're not going to look at things that they're not supposed to look at because they know that they're in the presence of you and you're a chashuv person. They're afraid to do that. They don't want to do that. And if you could just work on yourself, then everybody around, you'll have the most chashuva wife, the most chashuva kids, most chashuva chavrusa community. You could literally change the world, and I guarantee you will change the world, because every one of you in this room, I'm looking around the room, you're all amechum tzaddikim. You're all tzaddikim. You're here on the very last day of the Zman. I mean, you have every reason in the world not to be here. I have to be here because I'm giving the clothes issues. You have no reason to be here. But you're here. L'maisa, you're here. That itself is an amazing thing. That means that every one of you wants to work on. They're not doing it for, you know, because the Olam is here. They're doing it because I want to be here. I want to be in the, even Beis Medrash is empty. I'm going to be here because it's the right thing for me to do. That's an amazing thing. And that's going to take you so far in life. You're going to be able to continue Mirtz Hashem, just like building yourself up so much that you're radiating everything. You're just going to be like these beacons of light and positivity that will have such a positive ripple effect on the entire world that people will say, that's what a Yid is. That's what a Ben Taira is. That's what a chashuv person is. He's just chashuv. He's just like, what, is he give a shir? No, he doesn't give a shir. Does he, you know, the Vilna Gaon didn't give a shir, the Vilna Gaon didn't have a shul, didn't have a shtela, but he was there. He was in Vilna. He was just sitting there doing what he was doing day in and day out, and that has the impact that nothing else has. It's a very big chiddush, the Vilna Gaon is saying, because it's counterintuitive, right? It just seems so opposite. I would think that the Dumna Magid is right. You have to get out, you have to go and do a chain. No. The only thing I said starts with you and it ends with you, and in the process, Mamela, your entire radius is completely uplifted, it's changed, it's permeated with Kedusha. It's an amazing Kiddush that the Vilna Gaon is telling us. But it's something that is so important for us on a daily basis. Every day you wake up, say Maida Ani, you wash Negel Vasa, you daven, you learn, you go to work. You go to school, you act nice, you're positive, you're helpful, you're smiling, you're cheerful, you're helpful, you hold the door for people that are coming in behind you, and you give them a good morning, and you smile at them, you give them a little chizuk. That's all you need. That's the hashpa. Forget about running here, running there, going. All you need to do is just be the best version of yourself and keep working on you. Fill up, and boom, you're going to be a volcano of Kedusha, of positivity, of good stuff. And that's my wish to myself and to all of us, Mamela, that we should just always try to be that person that's just doing so much good internally that everybody says, wow, I could be that also. I also want to have that. And amidst Hashem, we should have a wonderful summer. We should come back. Those of you that are coming back, we should come back healthy and safe. And those of you that are moving on to the next stages of your life, you should have unlimited hatzlacha in everything that you do. But the bottom line is always keep in touch. Always stay true to the teachings that you were mekabel here. And we're very, very proud of you. Every single one, I you know, it sounds very cliche, but I personally am very, very proud of the yeshiva as a whole and the yechidim of the yeshiva. Every Talmud in this room is gold. You're gold. And you have so much in you. You have so much amazing, amazing stuff inside, just waiting, latent, with potential to come out. But don't think that you have to prematurely start spreading that. Work on yourself. Be the biggest Talmud Chacham that you could be. And learn as much as you can. And change as much as you can. And better yourself. The more that you put in, I think there's an expression, the better the ingredient, the better the cake. If you put in good ingredients, the cake is much better. You put in more stuff into you, you're going to be the best person that you could be. And you're already unbelievably great, but you can even get greater and greater, Mitzvah Hashem, every day. Make it a mission to better yourself. And just to Mitzvah Hashem, take your level of influence, le'elo le'elo, through this life work of Mitzvah Hashem, just changing, filling up, and then exuding and radiating tremendous Kedusha, tremendous Yiras Shamayim. Have a wonderful summer, healthy summer, and stay safe.